The Lifeboat Hour with Michael Rupert, Sundays at 9 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Nightclub at the end of the world. This is Michael C. Rupert, and welcome back to another episode of the Lifeboat Hour. This is Sunday, March 20, 2011, and what a week, guys. What a week. I've been looking all day today for any news out of Japan, and there is nothing. Every website that I've been to, and that's all of them, that's New York Times, Washington Post, ABC, CNN, MS, all of them. All they have blazoned, even bigger than the Japanese earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster, is Libya. I was going through news links. Rice Farmer is back with us online. He lives in Japan. He's the guy who brings us one of the two key researchers who bring us our news links every day that I comment on. And there was a story in there from a Japanese news agency, the status of Fukushima power plants, nuclear power plants, Sunday evening. And I go, great, there's some news. It's from the Mainichi News Service in Japan. And I click on the link, and the post has been taken down. Japan is still the big problem here. Let's get that straight. Japan is the thing that's bringing everything down quickly. And as I was going through the news links tonight, I stopped at ABC News, and they had a story, Japan announces two nuclear reactors under control. And then I go read the story, and it's reactors 5 and 6 at Fukushima Daiichi number plant. Those were never the issue. It's 1, 2, 3, and 4 that are all critical. What we know, though, critically, is that 1,706 tons of exposed spent fuel rods, fuel rods, have been exposed, open-air exposure, with a massive release of radiation. And Chris Martinson has been doing some amazing work on his site at chrismartinson.com. There's a lengthy interview that he did with an incredible expert who has helped Chris bring us some really useful news that's going up on our links tomorrow on the World News Desk at CollapseNet. And the lesson I take from this, and this is a guy who had been an officer on nuclear submarines. He was every kind of he ran the power division, whatever they call it, but that's the power plant division on nuclear subs. So he has every kind of credential there is, and what a helpful guy he's been. But guess what? The radiation from those 1,706 tons, although it hasn't reached the stratosphere yet, I would be telling you to take to get ready to take your potassium iodide. But that radiation isn't much helped by taking. It's a different kind of radiation. It's cesium, and we know there's some plutonium that has leaked out into the food supply. But again, I got to emphasize, potassium iodide only prevents against absorption of radioactive iodide, which is what, and some of that has already been released locally in Japan. But this is just getting more complicated by the minute. There's something else that I clipped that said that Japan's power grid is weakening. There were no more specifics, but it was from an official source. That's because there's so many workarounds and patches and Band-Aids in there, so that even though they do have power back to reactor number 2 via a line, that does not solve the reactor problems at the other three reactors. And nobody is declaring reactor 2 under control yet. But the point was finally admitted this week for a story that I put up on CollapseNet on the 14th, asking a very simple question. What would a complete meltdown at any one of the reactors do to the ability to repair the others? And those answers came out this week. on mainstream news from experts. They weren't headlined, but it's very clear that a complete catastrophic core meltdown at any one of the reactors would make it impossible to work on the other ones. That would include even 5 and 6 of them. We don't know what that would do, but needless to say, Japan is not over, and the fallout from that is the follow on is going to be devastating. We're already seeing auto parts suppliers closing in the or temporarily shutting down in the States because they can't get parts, and Japan is not coming online for a long time. There is nothing that's going to replace that. So anyway, we're moving through that. Now we have all this excitement in Libya. I do kind of agree with Gary who just preceded me here. I was listening to that. That Gaddafi is absolutely dead, and I think it may happen fairly quickly. There seems to be a lot of aggression. I just saw a story on the World News Desk that yet another Hilo assault ship, the USS Bataan, is en route to Libya. That would put it beside the Kearsarge, and the issue with that is that those are ships that land Marines into combat roles. So I'm not quite sure or convinced or believing, why should we, that U.S. troops won't go in. But I am quite sure Gaddafi is dead. But that sends a great message now to the rest of the people in the Arab world that if you rise up and revolt, the big powers will come and bail you out. On top of that, there's another demonstration in Saudi Arabia today, even after King Abdullah just threw out another $98 billion in bribes to his people. Violence is escalating. 5 protesters killed in Yemen. In Bahrain, the brutality continues unabated, and Iran is lurking behind the scenes, clearly hoping to foment a Shia uprising in Saudi Arabia. So, but as you step back from all this, and by the way, we're expecting Dmitry Orlov to be calling in sometime very soon tonight. I know we all want to hear from him, and Jim Kunstler said he would call in at about 45 after the hour tonight. And so I'm looking forward to hearing both, and I'm sure we all are too. As you step back from this, for those of us who have been doing the peak oil work for a long time, this is abundantly clear to us that everything is coming down now as a result of Japan, weeks, months, whatever. But as I look back on just what's happened in the last year, and this comes back to a point that I've been making in recent speeches, and I think I did on the show last week, which is that we can expect both the severity and frequency of the crises that are coming to increase from here on out. Big things fail in big ways. If you want to call in tonight, you can call me. Let's talk about whatever's on your mind. Otherwise, I'm just going to continue giving my analysis of where the situation is on many different levels. The number is 888-874-4888, 874-4888, or you can email me directly at lifeboathour@collapsenet.com. I've got a guy here who has already sent in a question for Dmitry and Jim, so let's see who shows up. I'm not going to blow the question before they get a chance to get on and hear it. So we're just going to talk here for some more time about what's going on. Within the lifeboat, the transition, whatever you want to call it, within the movement of people who are on the side of the line, as knowing that the infinite growth paradigm is dead, that would include Zeitgeist Venus Project, that would include the Running on Empty groups, Transition US. It would include people who have followed me, Jim Kunstler, any of us. Amongst all of us, there's Japan has kind of put a whole new energy into the dynamic. There are some, like me, I'm sure we'll hear like Dmitry Orlov and Jim Kunstler would say, this is time to get your afterburner on to start doing what you can. And I just got a wonderfully pleasing note, because I'm happy for this tonight, that Dmitry Orlov, author of Reinventing Collapse, a number of books. He has a wonderful website at cluborlov.org. We all know who he is. Dmitry, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Dmitry. Is there a Russian word for where we are right now?
Can't think of a single word for it. But precarious is how I would say in English.
Yeah, yeah. It's trying to digest the follow-on effects from Japan is difficult. What are the biggest issues in your mind about Japan right now?
Well, I think the thing that we should look forward to is a lot of supply chains from Japan breaking down.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be running short on a lot of parts, which are multiply sourced, but they're multiply sourced from, say, Fujitsu and Mitsubishi or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of products won't get delivered on time. There will be a lot of delays. I think there will be almost an immediate effect on hiring. So this is really a shock for the economy.
And there's no way to generate electricity. We had a great story on the World News Desk this week that was that you who sent it to me? Everybody's been cooperating so wonderfully. It's great. But that there are like 1.5 million vending machines in Japan owned by Coca-Cola that each use as much electricity as a house.
That one I didn't hear.
Yeah. Vending machines are ubiquitous throughout the country, and they're owned by Coca-Cola. And, of course, these are high-end. And they're all running, but there's no food in them now, but they're all sucking up power. This is how complex civilization kind of comes back to shoot you in the foot. We've got some questions coming in. Dmitry, I hope you can stay with us to answer a couple of questions. You up for that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rick from South Dakota is on the line. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, this is Nick. Michael, how are you?
Oh, Nick, I apologize. I misread.
No problem. I just have a question about basically why did it take America so long to get involved in this Libyan war? Why weren't we involved earlier when the revolution started there?
Well, there was actually never any good reason to get involved in another country's revolution. Revolutions are basically things that countries do for themselves, not as a result of a foreign intervention. It sort of invalidates the experiment if one side is helped by a foreign force. It's more of an invasion then, and whichever side sides with the invaders will then be on the losing side of a civil war. So
agreed.
I think in the beginning the United States understood two things. One is if they get involved, they lose. And two is if Gaddafi stays in power, they lose, because Gaddafi is a bit of a wild card, an Islamic socialist who believes in tribalism, who doesn't side with the West, who doesn't agree with Washington. So he had to somehow be made to go away. And so what we're seeing now is actually just, absolute desperation, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that just an air campaign is not enough to topple anyone, not Saddam Hussein, not anyone. You need ground troops to do that.
And
nobody has the stomach for that. So that's not going to happen. And so this is just your typical let's bomb somebody just because we have the weapons to do it. Not going to lead to much.
I approach it from a slight.
Do you think this is the United Nations maybe pulling some strings?
No. This is how I approach it, and it's not dissimilar from where Dmitry's coming from. But I look at it in terms of the inelasticity of the global oil supply. Libya was producing about 1.5 million barrels a day in a world that's now consuming roughly 85, 86 million barrels a day. But because there was no elasticity, we saw a further accentuation of an oil price spike that's already underway that will collapse European economies, if every economy, if it continues. And as I've been commenting since Libya started heating up, it's what, about 3 weeks ago now, is that, and I have a strong background in military and intelligence stuff, is that I saw a very difficult problem in assembling a coalition or a task force. Forget the political side, just from the military nuts and bolts, because Britain has gutted its military. France has cut back. We are stretched to the max. Italy is a basket case. So I was commenting for 2 weeks prior to this that, you know, they really got to hurry to get their act together, because I knew that it was going to be inevitable that NATO, not the UN, NATO would intervene. The UN just authorized NATO's actions. You still there, Nick?
Yep, I'm still here. I mean, you answered my question, so, yeah, okay. I appreciate it, Mike. Thanks a lot, man.
Cool, man. Thank you. Dimitri, we got one more. I'm a CollapseNet member. This is from Himanshu Tiwari. Sounds a very Japanese name. Nice to know you're okay. I'm a CollapseNet member. My wife and I live in Blacksburg, Virginia. Two questions. My wife and I are pursuing PhDs in environmental and mechanical engineering, respectively. Our tuition is paid by the university through research grants, so we are not accumulating any debt in the process, and we get paid, too. Good for you. Wonder sometimes what the future of PhDs in the engineering field will be with the dramatic changes that are underway. Collapse. We would like to know your thoughts on this. Second question, and Dimitri, I'll let you answer. In your book's columns, you refer to the power elites or the powers that be or the Bilderbergers, but I've rarely seen any names being spelled out. Do we know any names of some of these people? I've read two books by Mike. I've read Dimitri's books. Okay, he's read Counselor. Great. Dimitri, what do you got to say?
Okay, on the first question, I'm an engineer myself, and one thing I can tell you is that as an engineer, it's really difficult to stay unemployed, provided you're willing to do anything that needs to be done. Engineers are just incredibly useful in a large assortment of capacities. Now, mechanical engineering and environmental engineering are probably going to be areas where you will probably find lots and lots of things to apply yourself. So I really wouldn't worry about it. The fact that you are in full scholarship, which is something I've tried to do as well, is really good. You're not accumulating debt. So I would say keep going with it. Get your PhDs and then find something completely unrelated to do.
Yeah, I would say you have a pretty secure future. Go ahead, Dimitri.
So, yeah, as far as the Bilderbergers, I've never referred to them. The reason I don't name names is because I don't want them to come after me. So there's a little bit of self-preservation there.
That I sure.
And so I will continue to not name names for as long as I can.
And I have named names. I haven't referred to the Bilderbergers in ages because through all of my research, naming individual names doesn't do anything. The people can always be replaced. It's the system that supports and breeds them that has to be taken down. And I have named names, and I've paid some serious prices for it, including having all of my computers smashed. So, but again, naming names, I don't think is the right place to focus to find any kind of a workable solution. Dimitri, I'm going into the place where I want to play a new white trash song. If you're willing to hang for the other side, we'd love to have you stay. Maybe you can we can get a three-way with Jim Kunstler when he calls in later.
I think I'll sign off and let Jim take over if you don't mind.
All right, Dimitri. Hey, listen, everybody loves to hear from you. Dimitri at ClubOrloff.org. He's one of the best guys we have out here. Thank you so much for calling in tonight, man.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. Okay, new white trash song tonight. It's about that time. This is one of the ones that I co-wrote with the band. We've never played this song on the show before. And Doug Lewis and I and, you know, the band, we were sitting around talking one night, you know, about what Collapse was going to look like. It was about a year and a half ago. I said, it's going to be really messy. And I did the thing called Ooey Gooey Was a Worm. You probably all heard that. So this is a song called Ooey Gooey.
Oh, hey, hi, hello, from Babylon and Oz. Dabbing with my plug and drug. In bed with the aliens and crazies, aliens and crazies. Gonna spend the weekend lying in my room. Tune into Fox and CNN until I believe the
attraction. You are my deception. Fake movies and the weather girl is pretty. Weather girl is pretty. Until freaked out, give me 2-4-1. Have some home shopping network fun. Believe my credit card for payments. Credit card for payments.
Pretty much describes the world scene right now. It's ooey gooey, and it's got to get ooey gooeyer. That was some dark humor from the new White Trash. That's our band, Doug Lewis, me. Andy Kravitz helped found us. He's back in Philly making records, but we got 37 original songs on a double CD called Double Wide, and you can find us at newwhitetrash.com. You can listen for free. You can download them for $11.11, get a CD sent for $22.22. Dougie came up with that. I thought it was kind of cool. It's a double CD, 37 songs. Well worth it. Okay, we've got a few minutes before break. I got a question from Justin DeArmond. CollapseNet member here. Hey, dude. Hello, Mike. Is there any way to see or hear your latest speeches, presentations? Part one of the question. Yeah, I mean, they're out there. They're coming out. We're really stretched right now, CollapseNet. We're doing an urgent website redesign so that we can accommodate the flow of data that's coming in. We're growing very rapidly. We're pushing toward 4,000 members now in 60 countries. Have been growing explosively this week. There's been a number of new things that have come out. The video of my speech from last week at University of Delaware is not done yet. We will have that up and ready. That will be available on YouTube at some point. We'll let you know on the CollapseNet site. A really great video came up this week that was done by Karen Reibel-Chin, who was doing a series of video interviews for The Nation. And I was to be included with the likes of Rich Heinberg, Jim Kunstler, and so on. And it was a great interview, but at the last minute, The Nation decided not to to release it. I think back to 2003 when The Nation published a hit piece by David Korn, who now works for Fox News, saying that I had been fired from LAPD as a psychopath. When I was earning the highest rating reports possible, in fact, and had been, and was completely, no black marks at all in my record. So I don't know what the motive is for that. There's a lot of people having a hard time dealing with things. But anyway, this video was released. It was, once The Nation turned it down, it became free. It's up on YouTube. We have a link to it on our site. It's probably one of the best things I've done to sum up the state of our movement right now. I came to a real good insight as I was doing this interview. Karen Reibel-Chin did a great job on this. You can find it on the CollapseNet homepage, CollapseNet.com. which is that, you know, there's a lot of us who have been at this for a long, long time. And in our Lighthouse directory at Collapse Network, 1,100, very specifically chosen. This is not just grab a bunch of things and put them in there. Entries to all kinds of things that are going to become critical and necessary now. A lot of work's been done. That's completely free. But what I was so aware of was that there's a lot of us out here that have been waiting, wanting to help as many people as are now starting to come forward. And we have an oxygen mask for the people just getting here. They don't have to panic. And that's the beauty of this radio show. We have done so much good here, and I have to thank all of my wonderful guests and everybody who's called in. You've done some great stuff. So anyway, any of my other presentations, we should have a link to that from the CollapseNet homepage. Okay, you have a second part of the question. Is Iran rattling its saber in its latest statements about Bahrain and Saudi troops, or do you think that there is military intervention looming in Iran, or are they off limits due to cessation of oil production if invaded? Well, Iran is definitely stirring the pot under Saudi Arabia. They have issued very strong statements after Saudi troops this week entered Bahrain. That's troops from country A going into country B. Bahrain is primarily Shia. Saudi Arabia controlled by the Sunnis with a strong Shia minority population in the eastern part of Saudi Arabia where the oil is. And I just thought, what are you guys doing? I do think that Iran will walk to the brink and maybe step over, given the right global set of conditions. And I'm not looking forward to that. No major power is going to attack Iran now for any reason. Iran's a much bigger oil producer than Libya right now, and to take Iranian oil offline would cause a price spike that cannot even be described. I'm not worried about like Israel or the U.S. attacking Iran. What I'm worried about is Iran attacking Saudi Arabia. These people, you know, the world is that crazy. There was no stereotype by everything is crazy now. The infinite growth monetary paradigm is crazy, and this is one of those times when anything could happen. But I remain firmly convinced, Justin, that Saudi Arabia is scared out of its mind, and that there will be a revolt in Saudi Arabia at some point soon. And I believe that the Saudi royal family is doomed. I have no idea how it's going to play, but this, as I wrote in Crossing the Rubicon, is something the U.S. has been anticipating for a long time, because we've surrounded Saudi Arabia, and I predicted that we would try to balkanize that 6-7 years ago in Rubicon, and I believe that option is still out there. We've got 2 minutes from Mark Moulter. Hi, Mark. First of all, great show. Love all your work. Thank you so much. I am with you about the news on Japan's nuclear situation. Seems like it was shut down starting last Friday. My question is, the government has categorized this as the same level as Three Mile Island from what I can remember. Only had a leak, and when I see the Japanese nuclear site, it looks like World War III took place. Listen, they lie about Deepwater Horizon, they lie about stocks, they lie about Lehman Brothers, they lie about weapons of mass destruction, and you know, let's kind of get to that. Earlier during the week, I was watching CNN and MSNBC had an expert on, different experts saying that the crisis had already hit a 6 on the scale of 7. But remember, that works like the Richter scale. A level 5 nuclear accident is 10 times less, at level 6, 10 times more than a 5. And they're saying that it's only a 5 because it may only be 9 times greater now. But I don't buy any of those numbers at all. We look at the facts. Three Mile Island was a quick leak that lasted for a few, you know, for a short period of time and was shut off. There were other systems that had to be affected. This is an out-of-control issue at 4 separate reactors. So, you know, most of the people out there like those quick palliative placebo, 1 minute everything is under control statements, but there is nothing under control. They got power going into 2, but 3 is melting down. 3 is now, as of the last we heard, very precarious, and we multiply confirmed, thanks to people like Chris Martins and Nicole Foss, and through the work we do at CollapseNet, scanning stories all over the world, that those fuel rods in Reactor 4, 1,706 tons of them, were fully exposed. And the satellite photos showed that clearly. We had those on the World News Desk. Okay, we're rolling up on a station break here, so we're at the bottom of the hour. We got another song to take you out and bring you back called A Weird Kind of Sense. See you after the break.
Oh, what a mess we left you. What a mess we left you. Against the odds of the gods, we left you such a mess. Posting on the tea and champagne.
You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
Progressive Radio fans, I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and I do a program here on the network called The Green Front, as in reporting from the green front lines. That's where I've been for more than a decade, covering a beat that I think is fun, fascinating, fact-filled, and sometimes even kind of funny. Or not, when you consider the implications of our world-class denial here in America. The Green Front is an ostrich-free zone, though, where I select the most interesting and passionate eco-innovators out there and bring them to you live each Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. So join me as we wake up America with the activists, authors, experts, and ordinary citizens out there making an extraordinary green difference.
Hello, everyone. This is Richard Martin, host of your bi-weekly wake-up call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, coming to you live all the way from Singapore. I try to cut through the lies and misinformation to bring you what you need to know to prepare for the economic horrors that lie ahead. I'll give it to you straight in simple language. I don't sugarcoat the news. Unlike the government and media, I have no agenda other than to make you aware of ways in which you can protect yourselves and your loved ones. That's the wake-up call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. here on Progressive Radio Network.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, what a mess we left you. What a mess we left you. Against the odds of the gods, we left you such a mess.
Posting on the tea and champagne.
And that weather vane is changing about every 10 seconds now. Look to Japan, look to Libya, look to, here we go. We just got an email back. I want to get this right away from Himanshu Tiwari. Thank you very much. He writes, I am a frequent listener and questioner. And he says that he is actually from India and living in the U.S. I apologize for that mistake, Himanshu, but keep calling, keep corresponding, dude, because you're right. Good questions, and I hope you're a guy. You can email me back and say I'm a female, and then I'll get to apologize twice in one show. But anyway, I'm sorry for that. Okay, we've got a question. Oops, I was in the wrong email file. All right, okay. Uh-oh, okay. I just got a note from Susie Gruber up in Sonoma, California. NHK, I don't know what NHK is, we'll find out in a second, says water used to douse reactors may have leaked into the ocean. That would not be good. Okay, this is breaking on Zero Hedge, who has also been just a giant and a champion of late. They have been doing such amazing work, and you find them all over our World News Desk every day as we go through all the stories that we collect so that we can give you the best briefing there is in the world. It says, NHK says water used to douse reactors may have leaked into ocean. NHK cites Japan Nuclear Industrial Safety Agency. I believe that's a press agency. I'm not quite sure what NHK is. I believe it's a news agency in Japan. We'll want to look for signs of that. There goes the neighborhood, and there goes the sea life. Okay, we've got a call now from, I believe it's Janine from upstate New York. Janine, are you there? Are you there? Oh, we lost her. Okay, I got a signal from the studio. Janine from upstate New York asks, she and her husband are planning a trip to Southern Cal. Is it safe? For now, ostensibly, yes. I mean, everybody, all the experts are clear. There's no radiation danger here. Traces have been detected here. That's to be expected. That is not the kind of stuff that makes you want to go jump and start taking potassium iodide right away. The big question is whether or not the four reactors that are in trouble will be controlled to the point where none of them experiences a total meltdown of the core. That's the fundamental issue. There are too many monitors out there that would tell us right now if radiation levels were dangerous, and assuming that we were being misled. I'm not worried about that at the moment because nothing has really been blown up to the stratosphere, but that's what you would probably see in the event of a total core meltdown. Are you coming out for a vacation next week? I don't know. I mean, if there's a meltdown next week, all of the wind data now shows that stratospheric loads of radiation would take about 3 days to reach the coast. You can make your decision based upon that. Let's go back to some more emails because we have more questions. Here's another CollapseNet member, Jocelyn Forte, student. Hey there, CollapseNet member here. Love the World News Desk. Incredibly informative. Yeah, we know, man. It's just been very useful to a lot of people. And a lot of us who are doing press and journalism now, we're all getting tremendous energy from each other. So thanks for the compliment. Question about what's going on in Michigan with the emergency financial manager law. Is it likely other states will follow to implement? You know, I got to tell you, it's rare in my life that somebody brings up something I haven't heard of, but this is one. You can expect whatever this law is, and I'll look for it after the show. You can expect all kinds of crazy things to happen all over the country very, very quickly with respect to the issue of collective bargaining pension funds throughout the states. That has not abated. If Gaddafi could bump Japan off of all the home pages of the news stations today, they're probably only too happy to bump what's happening in Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, New Jersey, and every place else all over the country. I will look up emergency financial manager law right after the show, and maybe I'll comment on that on the World News Desk tomorrow. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. I appreciate it. Okay, question from Pete Stagic. Hi, Mike. The following must be a purposely cruel and outrageous joke. If you search for Iosat, potassium iodide tablets on Amazon, at this moment, the results indicate that the tablets are being sold by BP Medical Supplies. Pete, I don't know. The thought that British Petroleum would be making medical supplies is bad enough as it is, and if they're making potassium iodide, they're probably filling it with oil. I don't know. I can't conclude anything that we haven't established that BP Medical Supplies is the same as BP, the oil company. Oh, my God. Okay, so if you got questions, guys, tonight, 1-888-874-4888. And you can email me directly, and thanks for sending in questions tonight. LifeboatHour@CollapseNet.com. Now, if we're true to form in about 6 or 7 minutes, Jim Kunstler should be calling. Definitely want to hear what that feisty guy's got to say. We have just some great people out here. But there are still people in the so-called movement on this side of the line. I started to go there, I think, earlier. Who are not grasping the urgency of the situation and where, I've been trying diligently for the life of this show and on CollapseNet to bring anything that I thought was useful together and to form bonds between various groups and people with different perspectives from the economics, like Chris Martinson and Nicole Foss, but to, you know, to guys like Bob Waldrop and I always have trouble with his last name. I don't know why. Jim, who runs survivalblog.com. I apologize. Jim Rawls, thank you. And for all of us, we're all in the position that, hey, man, Japan put everything on a whole new downward speed. It was like kicking in the afterburner on collapse. Japan cannot recover. Japan will not recover ever. You cannot have economic growth without cheap energy and electricity. Japan will not be able to replace those 6 nuclear reactors, perhaps 10 that may ultimately be unusable. And there is no amount. There are stories coming out like, duh, Homer Simpson strikes again. In the wake of Japan's nuclear accident, oil demand is going to increase because the only places that Japan can go for it, electricity now, are to coal and oil, but then they got to build some plants, too. And diesel generators. So infinite growth is clearly dead, but there are still people out here who have the good, right ideas about sustainability and local food production. But, you know, there are some people there who are leaders who are having a hard time coming to grips with the urgency of the situation. And I guess what we would say to you is thank you so much for what you're doing, but now it's time to lead, follow, or get out of the way. This is really serious stuff right now, and days and weeks and time cannot be wasted. Good, we got 4 more emails, guys. All right, let's see if Kunstler calls in. This is from my dear friend Barry Silverthorne, who was one of the producers and editors on End of Suburbia, one of my first documentary film roles. Barry is just one of the best that I know. He's probably blushing right now as I'm talking to him. NHK, he writes, is the Japanese TV network. Oh, okay. Now, that's serious when NHK, the national network, is reporting that radioactive water used to cool the cores and the rods may have been re-injected back into the ocean. God knows what the effects of that are going to be. All right, here's we got questions coming in. Thanks so much, guys. I love this. From Justin DeArmond again. Hello again, Mike. Hope I'm not too annoying. No, keep it up, man. What's your take on how the sea life will be affected by the nuclear disaster? Well, you must have just heard. Yeah, some of the material from the explosions did make it into the sea off the coast. But with this disaster and the oil spill last year in the Gulf, the oceans are going to die. And did you hear about the new oil plume? 10 miles wide by 100 miles long. Yes, I did, Justin. There is a new oil plume in the Gulf of Mexico coming from that same ruptured, tortured, inflamed seabed that Matt Simmons and I and so many others were telling you about when Deepwater Horizon happened. The Gulf of Mexico is dead. You look at this last year, Gulf of Mexico, Deepwater Horizon. We've had Egypt. We've had Libya, we've had Japan. These things are coming back to back, and you have to step back and take you cannot ignore the fact that collapse is taking place at a breakneck pace right now. If you remember all of those things in one frame in your mind as having happened in the same 1-year period, you can make your own list after that. A question from Cynthia Bieber to the Lifeboat Hour. Hi, Michael. I'm a CollapseNet member. Thank you, Cynthia. And I have family in Hawaii. Should I be worried about them? I would say at the moment, no. Again, the key thing that everybody needs to know, which is what this is the question that I saw when the nuclear crisis first began in Japan. I don't know when it was, 8, 10 days ago. And it's, you know, it's because I come from the aerospace, you know, science family and all that. But it was so clear to me from the first day with 4 reactors side by side, I saw clearly that a total catastrophic core meltdown in any one of the four reactors would doom all four of them simultaneously. And the thing that we're all holding our breath, we have two separate issues now from the way I see it. The first is how much real radiation was released from those exposed fuel rods. Plutonium turning up in the food chain. They're expanding the evac zones in Japan. Multiple stories about local food being tainted. How much radiation was released from that? And what will it do? Don't have a clear picture. And the other is, will there be a critical meltdown, a catastrophic meltdown of one core? That's what we all want to see is or isn't going to happen. Because if one core has a critical meltdown, all four reactors are going to go. George is on the phone. George, are you there?
Yes, I am. I have a couple of solutions for your problem.
Bring them on.
They could go geothermal, just like Iceland. Iceland uses the actual steam from the vents, from the volcanic vents and things like that, as a means to generate electricity. They also use it to run to hothouses where they grow tropical plants for their own fruits and vegetables.
Do you know
and,
if
Japan has them all over the place, from Beppu in the south to Sapporo in the north, which is the far north? I mean, I never could understand why they didn't go that way. The other thing is they cracked the turning water into hydrogen 30 years ago, and that's, you can even see that on YouTube in places like that. Even individuals have used it for cars and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
no. Okay. I have to disagree with you on the hydrogen. Hydrogen is an absolute joke. It takes more energy to separate the hydrogen than you get from burning. It takes 3,000 gallons of gaseous hydrogen to give you the same amount of energy as in a gallon of gasoline. That's a UC study from 1998 that I used in Crossing the Rubicon. Very clear. The issue with geothermal, you have a good point there if they have enough access points to tap geothermal energy, but the problem is now, and we cover this clearly on the World News Desk at CollapseNet, is that the infrastructure isn't there to run the wires and the transformers, and that's all copper. And copper, given the state of collapse and rising commodity prices, because everybody's eating copper like crazy, copper is spiking in price, and there isn't enough copper to run the wires, let alone build the transformers or anything else. Now, Japan is the worst debtor nation in the world right now. Its main creditor is itself. It writes checks and lends money to itself, but it has to service the debt. Their economy was collapsing anyway. So mobilizing to implement a geothermal solution sufficient to replace what has been lost, I really think, is a bridge too far.
I'm losing you.
Are you there?
Yes, I was losing your voice. I couldn't hear what you're saying.
Oh, I just don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't think it's possible. There's not enough copper to build the wires.
What?
There's no money to build the infrastructure.
Why couldn't they use ceramics? Japan has been known for their ceramics for 1,000 years, and that's how they got into the other things. You make ceramic pipes that basically are... I mean, there's ways around things that sometimes if you think outside the box, I'm sure there's a way around this, those solutions. But by the way, your NHK is the largest broadcaster in the world. They broadcast the three major networks in Japan plus radio stations. I used to work for them.
Okay.
I was over there for a while.
All right.
So they are just not a news service. They are the largest TV and radio network probably in the world, because they literally own three major networks over there.
Thank you for your call, George. I've got Jim Kunstler on hold. I'd like to bring him into the show. We've all been waiting to hear from him. James Howard Kunstler, are you there?
What kind of hold you got on me?
What kind
you
are,
hammer
Jack?
Lock.
Wrist lock, twist lock,
that
I don't
throat,
know.
The Macumba death grip.
All right, so I asked Dmitry for a Russian word to describe our situation. He said he couldn't come up with one. Come
Isn't
on.
Isn't there one that, you know, means everything is completely beyond repair? And
yeah, yeah. I've made one up, one of my own, which is phenargulated.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works, but you've...
Phenargulated?
Yeah, phenargulated, yeah.
We've got some in Yiddish that are fun, like... verstutzt and verschimmelt and verblunget.
Verkrampt?
Verblunget.
Ah, okay.
Hey, the situation itself for Blunget.
This is it, and so you know we've been talking about Japan. My last caller seemed to think, gee, we could just make ceramic pipes and tap geothermal, and Japan will be as good as new. It will never be as good as new. Is Japan dead, Jim?
I have a strange outside the box theory about Japan, which is that, and I thought this before the earthquake, actually, because they were demoralized for 2 decades, mm-hmm. and it looked like they didn't really know what they were going to do, and they must have known that, you know, the energy thing was going to run out for them sooner or later, you know. Sooner or later, they'd have a problem getting oil, coal, gas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you there, Mike?
Yes, I am.
No. So, do you agree?
Absolutely agree.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been around this issue of peak oil long enough to know that every major world government knows what peak oil is. They just won't admit it.
Yeah, and they import 99% of their stuff or something like that. It's pretty darn high. So anyway, my thought about this is that, you know, they were pretty demoralized. Their population was shrinking. They had reached sort of peak industry. And I got a feeling maybe they were heading back to, like, the 18th century. And
yeah.
Only, you know, they were going to actually be pioneers for everybody else.
Yeah, well, you know, get the best laid plans of mice and dumb humans. Everybody's trapped in infinite growth still. Although I'm starting to see some stories saying that infinite growth is dead. Should we celebrate yet?
Well, I mean, thinking about Japan itself, their history is something that's worth paying attention to. You know, up until the moment that they really opened up in the mid-19th century, they were pretty much a medieval society. And then, you know, within like 1.5 generations, they became this industrial giant. They went from being quasi-medieval in 1850 to having a giant steel navy challenging the Russians in the early 20th century, mm-hmm. half century later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and having railroads and, you know, all the accoutrements of being an advanced society and as much as anybody else. And I think that the transition for them was very violent and especially very destructive of their traditional culture.
Yes.
And I think I got a feeling that they're actually very nostalgic for traditional culture. And I mean nostalgic not in the sentimental sense, but in the true sense of being homesick for something they left behind.
Well, I think they're going to be pushed back in that direction. The only problem is the detritus of everything. I'm really worried about disease and starvation there now, and we are seeing some reports about disease.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I think that they're a pretty orderly society, and I imagine that at this point they will be able to contain and mitigate those kinds of problems on any kind of a grand scale. I mean, apart from some village being really isolated because of the tidal wave and the earthquake. I mean, I don't think that there's going to be mass starvation. I also, honest to God, I mean, I think if it really came down to it right now, you know, that we would just drop as many MREs as we could over there, and so would everybody else.
Yeah.
And they'd get them around.
One thing I've noticed that is not surprising to me at all is that the level of international donations to Japan thus far is significantly less than Haiti. I think everybody's broke. I think everybody's aided out. What do you think?
Well, I think that's a likely part of the story. I don't think it's because people hate Japan.
No.
But that may be. We may have shot our wad on that.
I had the most amazing experience this week, Jim, you who wrote this amazing heartwarming book called World Made by Hand. I just love that book, man.
Thanks.
I just plug it all the time.
Let's plug the sequel, too, The Witch of Hebron.
The Witch of Hebron. And I will have to get that, especially when I need a break from this. But I went out for dinner one night this week, and I went to my local sushi place, and it was packed. It was just, I've never seen it that full in my life. And everybody understood what was going on. It was Americans reaching out to touch something Japanese in the only way we could find. And I thought that was kind of comforting.
Yeah, I think that there's a great deal of sympathy. And as far as the, you know, the financial donation thing, let's remember, you know, China hasn't really been begging or poor-mouthing. And, you know, no, there isn't a general assumption around that it's an impoverished nation. So, you know, I think that there is an assumption among lots of people that, you know, this may be a blow to them, but it's not a blow in the way that the earthquake in Port-au-Prince was to Haiti.
I did get one report today from Rice Farmer, who is someone who helps collect our stories for the World News Desk every day. Mm-hmm. He lives in Japan. And I got this report about 3 hours before the show. He says, not sure how well this will go. The reason that some recent power cuts have been canceled is lots of conservation on the part of residential users, orderly society. Production cuts by factories, the medical supply company where my son works, cannot operate full time, and fewer trains running. If all the factories and trains were running as usual, power demand would far outstrip supply.
Mm-hmm.
Gasoline and kerosene are still being rationed here. People are allowed to buy up to 20 liters of each per day. I'm sure that the heavy users like delivery services buy more by visiting different gas stations. So that's the latest piece of news I have directly from...
I'm surprised that they're getting 20 liters a day. That's actually rather a lot for a nation that you know is in such trouble and has to get all of its oil, really, from tankers from far, far away. So it's sort of a testament to the fact that their supply chains are still strong.
I think they probably had refined inventory that wasn't moving out for the first 5, 6, 7 days after the earthquake, and now they're starting to move it. I wonder how long that'll last.
Well, that's a good point.
But Japan is never going to have any economic activity.
Oh, I think they'll have economic activity, but I do think that... I think that they're kind of, even though they're very, very, you know, modern scientific people, I think that they're rather superstitious about what nature is telling them. And, I have a feeling that this is going to be a signal to them to get smaller and get less global and get less industrial and go somewhere else than where they've been culturally for the last 125 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they're going to be making a trip down that path, and we'll see how it goes. I thought they were heading that way before the earthquake.
We're all keeping our fingers crossed. Eric from Ireland, Eric Cunningham in Ireland. He says, I'm listening and live in Ireland. Could any of you listeners confirm the absence of dried goods from the shelves, particularly those that you had only to add water to boil? Well, in Japan, that's absolutely true. I have received multiple firsthand reports of that from CollapseNet staff who were there and other press reports. The store shelves are just bare dry now.
I never eat that stuff anyway, so I wouldn't know. I don't even know. I wouldn't even look for it. So
he also says that he thinks Libya is being used to hide Japan. Yeah.
Oh, that's nonsense. I think Libya's, you know, I get so many letters from people who are just so paranoid, and I just tend not, you know, I got one today from a guy who, you know, do you ever read the Zero Hedge website?
Frequently.
Okay, it's a great compendium of stuff with an obvious slant, right? You know, but it's a great compendium of financial and other news. So they ran a story early this morning that there's a new oil slick in the vicinity of the Macondo blowout from, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico last spring.
I've seen separate confirmation of that.
I haven't seen any on any of the mainstream media, by the way.
I have. Well, not a mainstream.
I'm looking at CNN right here, and it's not on there.
Exactly.
But I don't think that these guys are hiding that news. I really don't. I just don't believe that. But anyway, this guy sent me this thing, which I'd seen earlier in the day, and he said, isn't this proof that Matt Simmons was assassinated? And I wrote back to the guy and said, I'm sorry, you know, your logic is faulty.
Very.
Just because this thing is leaking again doesn't mean that Matt Simmons was bumped off.
Yeah, I mean, what was that line we had in Prophets of Doom? We got about a minute left, Jim, where you said something that was one of my pet peeves, too. Just because you can measure something doesn't mean you can control it. There are big leaps of logic being made all over the place.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we understand why Matt Simmons passed away in his hot tub. And, I don't think he was bumped off.
I think his
even
heart
if the Macondo blowout is every bit as bad as he said it was, you know, or leaking again. It's still, you know, it doesn't mean that he was bumped off.
Well, Jim Kunstler, we're running out of time. Jim Kunstler is a brilliant author, brilliant writer, longtime friend, longtime guy out here in the peak oil scene. You can find him at www.kunstler.com. We've come to the end of another
life. And my blog runs on Monday mornings.
Blog runs on Monday. Well, I'm dying to see what you put up tomorrow, brother.
Me too. I haven't figured out what it is yet.
Hey, man, thank you so much for calling in tonight. Sorry we didn't get to all the questions. That means you're listening. We'll see you next week on the Lifeboat Hour.